Hello, everyone, and welcome along to Northumberland FA podcast series from the sidelines with myself, Gary Middleton, and special guest today, Rob Akin. And we're going to chat today around the growth of the female game and how it all started. So, hi, Rob. Thanks for coming on from the sidelines today.
Hi, Gary. Looking good. Really looking forward to this. Been a while we've had a chat.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. Rob, can you just explain to everyone listening today your previous roles within football development within the county in your area around the Newcastle Football Development
Scheme? Football Development Scheme, and that was launched in 1987. So we had lots of different aspects that we had to get to, covering from mini soccer all the way up to coach education and onto coaching teams and working in the elite area with Newcastle United Football Club, and also working in girls and women's football and working in the elite area with Newcastle United Women. But it's been a great journey and it's flown over. But the beauty is all of the legacy that's been left behind from what was set up back in the day with Barney.
Yeah, some fantastic work back then, Rob, because there wasn't the growth back then that we see now. Would you agree with that?
Oh, massively, Gary. I mean, the football development teams throughout the country, Bradford, Cheshire, London, Manchester, they were brought about on the back of the hooliganism problem in the game. So the FA thought, we've got to do something. We've got to get down to the roots and educate people. So that was the way it all started. And coaching just didn't exist, Gary. You played, I played, and we basically run around the pitch. And then we were lucky we got on it. We got a ball. But we suddenly had coaches who were turning up with enough footballs, one for each kid, to really hammer the techniques. And it was something that came from abroad, really. We struggled as a country, as a nation, to play any sort of what we'd call football worth watching. It was just hit man up front and let's see how it goes. But that totally changed. And we had to educate coaches to realise that it's about children and certainly about techniques. And I can remember growing up, I played football, played every day of the week, but never got any coaching. So you just had to, you were self-taught. You copied your heroes that you've seen on TV or at St. James's Park, and that's the best you could do. But we've got a fantastic situation now in the county where every club is a mini football development scheme. And the way they're getting the growth of teams and boys' teams and girls' teams, the growth is massive. It's fantastic.
Rob, when did women's football first become established in Newcastle and Northumberland?
I mean, there's always been women's football, going off on a tangent here, since 1920s, the First World War and all the rest of it. And then it was under the radar for a long time. But to bring it up to date, in 1987, when the Football Development Scheme kicked off, one of the things that needed to be addressed, amongst all the other strands of Barney's work program, if you like, was to do some work on developing football opportunities for girls, women. And how it started was there was a female coach called Kim Moore, who at the time was on placement at the NFDS from Northumberland Polytechnic, which is now Northumbria University. And her remit was to increase football opportunities for young girls. And that would be via schools programs, weekly coaching centers. And then Kim went on to set up Newcastle Women's Football Club in 1989. Now, as well as setting up that football club, she signposted quite a few women to take the prelim coaching badges with me and Barney. So basically that was its initial start, and that was the first seeds, I suppose, going back to 1989 when the women's club started.
Rob, I'm not sure if you've got this number, but how many women's clubs were established in the region in the 90s?
Well, Newcastle Women's Football Club would be in one. Middlesbrough, Sunderland, and Middlesbrough and Sunderland basically ran out the back of the men's clubs community programs. We had Cowgate Kestrels in Newcastle. Now the Kestrels moved on to become Blythe Spartans Ladies, who and they achieved quite a bit. They did have a short spell at RTM Newcastle, but to be honest, they were the only four teams within this region, and they did really well to survive, as their away fixtures would take them to Hull, Doncaster, Blackpool, Huddersfield, and Manchester, etc. Which you can imagine, it just drained their finances. Mm-hmm. So that basically that they were the four teams. I mean, we've got a lot more now, which is fantastic.
Yeah, some big challenges back then, Rob, for them funding, getting around on buses. What were the visible changes as the female game started to flourish and grow, Rob?
Again, you've played, I've played. You've very rarely seen a female footballer, even at school. But the big change is it happened 1993. The Football Association took on the run of the England national women's team. Prior to that, there was a WFA, Women's Football Association, that were basically amateurs and volunteers that ran a women's team. But one of our FA regional coaches, Ted Copeland, who was actually from Killingworth, was the first manager of the England women's football team back in 93. Ted was then followed on by the first full-time manager, which was Hope Powell. And Hope was appointed to improve the national women's team and also to oversee feeder teams and coach development for females became really big and a good challenge, and that was throughout the whole country. Aaron Hamilton, who I think you may know, mm-hmm. played for Blythe Spartans. She won her first England cap under Hope Powell after first being spotted by Ted Copeland. Aaron was the first of many players to progress into the FAA national programme. Now, bearing in mind, she would have been age 14 back then. So things were starting to really grow and flourish, but mm-hmm. there was still a load of work to do.
Yeah, outstanding, Rob. Rob, when did the football development scheme become more proactive in cultivating its girls and women's football development programme?
Well, the scheme was really popular, Gary. It was growing at a rate of knots, and we came around to probably the new millennium, the year 2000. And I had some fantastic staff. I had Neil Winskill, Ben Dawson, Steve Baharrell, Terry Mitchell, name them. They just came through and they were very, very good providers of all different types of development. So 2000, what you would do, we'd have our little meetings, right, we really need to get stuck into developing girls' football. There was some women's football, there was the odd school teams, but there was nothing happening at the bottom end. So myself and Terry Mitchell decided to put on the first mini soccer centre for girls football on a Sunday morning. We had 12 turn up. I think three of them were just mates of his daughters, but that was a start, and that's where we had to grow it. We then pulled together a football development program called From Dreams to Excellence. So it was basically taking an eight-year-old kid, starting at a mini soccer center and going through the advanced coaching sessions, playing in 6v6, 8v8 teams on a weekly basis. And as it progressed up to the elite level with the Newcastle Women's Football Club, it was fantastic. But this was only possible with the partnerships put in place. The NFA, Les Todd, who was fantastic, supportive of girls' football, Northumbria University and the sports colleges, where the girls could go on to study and play football as well. So playing midweek fixtures and studying was a great way of moving the game on. So there you have it. In a short little bit, I suppose, is a lot more in-depth stuff, but that's as quickly as I could do it for you.
Yeah, Rob, was there any specific aspect of the female game that needed more attention than other areas back then?
It was very like when the football development scheme first started in 1987, the coach development came on board. We had to really work as coaches on technique, same as we did with the boys in 87. So this was 2000, and getting young girls to get on the ball and learn the techniques and the tricks and the turns and all the rest of it. Because from the ages of 8 to 12, that's crucial in grassroots to become competent on the ball, which allows the players to develop the skills to express themselves. Then putting them into the game and being able to play under pressure. The first generations of female players tended to be girls and women who arrived at football, haven't played other sports such as hockey and netball. So we really need to change that process. And it was no different to coaching the boys in the academies or the centres of excellence. It was a good level. And we had some girls starting to attend those classes as well.
Rob, how was success measured during the programme?
Like all things where there's funding involved, Gary, it's about attendances. People need to see that, and KPIs. But as always with the football development scheme, it was about quality over quantity. So the key was to ensure the steady growth that would be sustainable over the next 5 years. Regular report writing, excellent PR, and word of mouth were crucial. So people would go and tell people about the courses we're putting on and the girls' teams and this, that, and the other, and it just started to snowball. And it became the fastest growing female sport in the country. So we were pushing an open door, but this was happening right across England. So it was a fantastic time.
Rob, but the Newcastle United women today, just congratulations on successful promotion again into the Women's Championship. You were at the game yesterday.
I was at the game.
Amazing turnout, Rob.
Oh, I mean, it was the highest capacity, highest gate at Kingston Park this year. Bear in mind the Falcons player there. Mm-hmm. So it was a fantastic environment. It's brilliant to see. It's accessible. I'm actually talking to some fellas who their first real involvement watching football has been with the women's team on the back of the England Euros and the World Cup. And when you're talking, well, do you go to St. James's to watch a men? No, I've never been there. And for various reasons, they just find that this is much more laid back, much more fun. Obviously, the technique's there more than the physical power. But I think it's at a state now where it can only grow and really kick on. The beauty of going at the championship next season is we've got Sunderland in there. They may get promoted up. Durham are in there, so you get some local derbies. But the standard is much higher than what they've been playing over the last couple of seasons. So it'll be a case of surviving in the championship and travelling all over the country and playing these top professional men's clubs that have women's teams. So it's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. And when they play at St. James's Park, they get 20,000-odd. You know, and we've got the England women's team coming soon. That'll be a sellout because people want to be there. The standard has grown massively, and that's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. Robin, and the men's first team are supporting and backing the women's team at present, which is fantastic to see, supporting the female game. But when did Newcastle United actually become involved with the women's team?
Well, I'm working for this scheme. I'm now the football development officer. This football development scheme and the city council had a good relationship with the football club. over various years, and I'm aware, because I speak to quite a lot of the ex-players from way back in Kim and people like that when it first started. I'm aware that they tried to get involved with the Newcastle United men's club, but it was to no avail. Men just didn't think it was worth bothering with or pursuing. Certainly on a business side, it certainly wasn't. But I think the relationship between the football development scheme and the club, i.e. me being the scheme and I was coaching the academy as well, it was quite a positive one. There was some trust built up. Now, we just kept getting on doing what we were doing, and we did weekly PR. We had press releases. We had all sorts. There was a free paper came out every Friday. We were on the full back page of that, so everybody would know. And we just changed the image and just kept building and building. Once again, through our Dreams to Excellence program, we had 40 women who were involved with the first team, reserve team, and the development team, trained every Thursday and Tuesdays. So people were taking note of this. Once we got promoted up into the FA Women's Premier League Northern Division, that was probably the final piece in the jigsaw to get the powers at the club to come on board. So basically, I got a letter, still got it, to say, you've got permission to use the Newcastle United brand and the Newcastle United company name, which was massive. So that gave us a real push on. So that was fantastic. And that's all we got. We got a letter. We didn't get nothing else. But our other partners would be Adidas, City Council, Northern Rock, and Northumbria University.
And all of that, Rob, you know, just what you've talked about there, that would have just been, you know, the start of building the female game and the brand of what that actually looks like, as you see with your other partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was my job, Gary. I wasn't doing it as a volunteer, so it was part of my role as a football development officer, which is, you know, it was my job. And as I've said, I had some great staff who could then get on with the rest of the programs that were massive, and I think it helped them, to be honest. Me getting involved with the women's side probably set them free to develop their own expertise, so they wouldn't be stifled by me. And the legacy has shown these individuals that we've mentioned previously have gone on to achieve so much in the game, so that was a good thing as well. So I think It was everything. It happened probably by accident, some of it not. But we really made real inroads to change the image. Yeah. If I'm positive, having more technical players and players who wanted to be fitter, wanted to train, and they started an earlier age. And they loved it. I mean, they would be grateful for anything. They'd come and work on a fun day all day. The girls' fund here just put an Adidas sweatshirt, and that was the beauty of it, you know.
Rob, how was the growing as the demand grew for girls' football activities? How was that managed in the around the area?
Yeah, I mean, the potential to grow was always there, Gary, but as you know, it's about quality coaches and staff and funding as well. But again, we had to look at it, and it come from a different direction. And I've mentioned all the male coaches there, but we had to have a robust female coach education strategy. So mentoring and supporting the likes of Lisa Bell, Claire Robinson, Mel Ray, Nicola Hepworth, Kerry Davis, and Jill Stacey, etc., and giving them the freedom to develop their own little skill set was crucial. It makes a big difference when you've got a female coach coaching the girls. We can go in, we've got all the knowledge and the understanding, but it's a totally different environment. And we had ex-players who I've just talked about from the women's club who would come and give their time up and help and work on fun days, and were great role models. So this was important when you're working with 7, 8, 9, 10 year olds. to have these positive female role models who also are good technicians when demonstrating the coaching sessions.
Yeah, it's interesting, Rob, you know, right back then around supporting the female coaches to develop their skill set right back then, and the work that's been done since then within the country from the FA to develop more and more female coaches at all different levels, from grassroots right the way through the professional game, to make sure we've got that that role model in front of our female players, Rob.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think, again, we have to evolve, and we've came through the same route, Gary, where football was different then. It was what it was, but then we had to evolve, and the skills that some of these females had were skills we didn't have as coaches and male players. And you just watch them, and they're brilliant with the young lasses, you know, and that just settles everything down. And it takes time to help the kids to understand and fall in love with the game of football, but massively so. And this talk about, oh, could a woman coach work in the men's game, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know what that argument's about. It's what's the point of even having it? It's what females want now, and female coaches have improved so much that the female players don't really bother if it's a man or a woman, you know, where one time that wasn't the case. They needed to be taken to a different level, but that can be done now. We've got some fantastic female coaches who know the game inside out, and that's how far it's progressed.
Rob, what would you say was the major turn point in helping and supporting the female game to grow substantially?
I had to think about this quite a bit, Gary, but putting me memory back into gear and going back, I remember that initially 14-year-old girls could play in senior football, and I had Emma McInerney, Vicky Greenwell, probably Lindsay McCubbin, Crooksy, all them playing in women's football age 14 and traveling down halfway down the country to play in a game. Now then the rule came in that you had to be 16 before you could play senior football. Now, what that did, it actually opened up a big opportunity below 16 to have under 12s, under 14s, and under 16s girls teams, and then moving on to every year having girls teams. So that was great, because then you weren't putting kids straight into the pool in senior football, which, with greatest respect, some of it wasn't great to watch. And there wasn't a lot of technique, but those who were technically gifted coming through could stay in their age groups. They could end up in the centre of excellence and get everything that the boys would get in the centre of excellence and work to a good standard and really get that high tempo of the game. So anybody watching the game yesterday up at Kingston Park, the girls from Newcastle United, who were full-time now, never let up. And they just kept going and going. So fitness isn't a problem. And that was one of the big things as well. So that changing, everything flourished overnight. So local football in Northumberland, suddenly you've got clubs running girls teams. We've now got it where they've got under sevens, under eights girls teams, and it's fantastic. And it can only get better as well.
Rob, did you ever, well, we discussed it earlier in the call, you know, the women's team now playing at St. James's Park in front of 25,000 people. Did you ever envisage seeing this happen, going right back to when you started at the football development scheme?
No, not in a million years, Gary. I mean, the people at Newcastle United were okay. They seen me, I was never going to be a threat, and they knew who I was, and, you know, my qualifications and all the rest of it. And I'd worked at the academy, but now that it was a different age, honestly. Mm-hmm. The best we ever got was some free tickets, you know what I mean? And they'd use us as and when they needed us for certain things at St. James's Park. But to see the girls playing on St James's Park and seeing families getting into St James's Park, which you can't do to see the men's team because it's a sellout, and I think that's helped as well. But to be honest, now the new owners have been key to this happening. And seeing whole families attend with their little kids, who it's cost a quid to get in, it just gives them a fantastic engagement and seeing what's possible. And the future can only get better. Will they be playing on St James's Park every week when they get into the top leagues? Probably not. Like Man City, they need to have their own little stadium. But it's been a masterstroke by the new owners, because they were in the game yesterday when the girls were getting the football league, that they've just won the trophy. And that means a lot to supporters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're serious mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah. Rob, what do you see the future looking like in women's football as it continues to grow and expand, especially in the area?
It can be anything at once.
Mm-hmm.
I think grassroots club take it more serious than they did in the past, where it was a ticky box to get a bit of funding or whatever. It's now in some clubs more popular than it is with some of the boys' teams. We need to sustain that, but we need to get female coaches and females involved because they've got a difference, as we've said. They're much better with the younger kids. And they're not getting excited about trying to win trophies and leagues to the detriment of the kids' development. On the back of the Lionesses' win in the Euros and their success in the World Cup, the massive exposure has moved on much quicker than anybody thought. The Lionesses will be playing at St James's Park for the first time ever in May when they host France. And it's a competitive qualifier. It's not a friendly. And it'll be 3 points that we need to win. And I think that'll be a sellout, as I've said. But I've got no doubt that that just gives young girls and young boys are turning up, would you believe, with the name of the female players on the back of their shirts who play for Newcastle. So that's kids grown up, totally different mindset. But it's attracting new supporters. Now, we've got up in the championship. The women's team have got up in the championship. The WSL in 2 years will be restructured. They're looking by 3 years' time to have every club fully professional. There'll be two leagues, ideally with 16 professional teams in each, and that'll attract massive TV revenue and a much bigger European club competition for the professional clubs. Once again, this will be fantastic on TV. I mean, the amount of games on TV now. It was the two semi-finals of the Women's FA Cup yesterday. Man United beat Chelsea and Tottenham just beat Leicester in extra time. So it'll go to Wembley. It'll be a sellout again. And it's about supporters. So we've gone from schemes being set up 1987 to change people's idea of why they go to the game and stop hooliganism, to now people wanting to buy tickets and go to games and just having a fantastic day out. And to be fair, it's going to be tough for the women's team next season. It's going to be tough and have to stay in that league, where a lot of the games this last couple of seasons have been winning at a canter, and fans need to realise that that'll change. But what will also have to change is the club, the owners, will now have to try and get some better players in. And it won't be long before the first £1 million female footballer happens. Well, not far off now. We've got the WSL, and it's full of all the top internationals from Europe. And it's good to watch. It's different to men's football, Gary. It's like men's and women's tennis. It's the same rules, same size court, whatever, but it's totally different. And I think winning and losing doesn't affect people as badly as it does with the men's, you know. So if they lose a game, everybody's up in arms saying they can pick a better team, where this is about just taking kids along and having fun.
Brilliant, Rob. Rob, absolute pleasure to chat with you today. On From the Sidelines, around the growth of the women's game. Thank you very much.
No, it's been a pleasure, Gary, and it's always nice catching up with you, and it's always nice seeing what was set up years ago.
Yes, that absolutely.
We were all involved with where we are now and the legacies of what we've got, and we've got to keep going. Just got to keep chipping away and educating people in Menton, people in support people, because the game belongs to everybody, Gary, and I think that's what was summed up yesterday. That game that was at Kingston Park, it belonged to everybody, and you could just see it. It gives everybody, like this morning on social media, everybody's talking about the game, and they're just so happy. And obviously, they're black and white supporters, so that's a great thing. Yeah,
absolutely, well said, Rob. Rob, thank you very much once again.
Yep, speak to you again, guys. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Rob.